Today we continue with factorization positions of matrices. And their strong relation with direct methods. Before, we have to say something about an important aspect regarding mainly direct methods, but also any method we can use to solve a linear system. I am referring to the condition number of matrix. That is, maybe you know already the definition of this number. I give you immediately the condition number of matrix is the real number mu of A defined as the product of these two norms. The matrix A must be invertible. So we have this number that besides being evidently not negative is also larger than 1, larger or equal than 1. The role of this number is put in evidence by an inequality that you probably know in a simplified form. The simplified form of this inequality is that if we replace the exact linear system A by X equal to B with a perturbed linear systems, the perturbed linear system A by X plus delta X equal to B plus delta B, then we have that this quantity, that is the perturbation of the result, over the result, in norm over the norm of the exact result, must be less or equal to the product of this number, the condition number, by I can say the relative perturbation of the right term of the linear system. I want to show you a more general form of this inequality. That is the case when I have a perturbation also on the coefficient matrix. I mean, we consider instead of the exact system this more general kind of perturbed system A plus delta A by X plus delta X equal to B plus delta B. What can we say? Our goal is to obtain another, more general inequality of this type. we multiply a by x, a delta a by x, and the sum of a and delta a by delta x b plus delta b. Here we have some algebraic manipulations. A by x, b, they are equal. I simplify them. I put this term on the other side. So I have the Pythagorean matrix by delta x, and on the other side delta b minus delta a by x. Well, at this point, since I have the assumption that a is non-singular, I multiply, I put in as a factor the matrix A on the left, so I have A by the identity plus the inverse of A by delta A and the other terms. What can I do? I consider the inverse of A and multiply both the sides by this inverse. So I find this matrix is left on the left side. Multiplied by delta x equal to the inverse use this assumption about the perturbation in order the problem is to be able to invert these matrix. So I need this assumption, the following assumption. Product of these two norms, I require that it is less or equal than 1. This means that delta A must be sufficiently small. If delta A is small, a norm, I think that this inequality is satisfied. In this case, I introduced this fact as an exercise last time. If you have matrix of this form with Z, I need this inequality strict, must be strict, less, strictly less than 1. With the norm and norm of Z less than 1, then the matrix is invertible, is singular, and its norm is less or equal than 1 over 1 minus the norm of Z. Can I apply this fact, this case? Well, it is sufficient to check that the matrix Z, that is this matrix, has the norm less than 1. So, the norm of the inverse of A by A, that must be smaller than the product of two norms. And by this assumption, we have that the norm of this matrix is less than 1. So this matrix is non-singular. I can consider and use its inverse. So I can write delta x equal to the inverse of this matrix. Multiplied by the other terms that were present on the left, on the right side. Equals 3 inside the bracket delta v minus delta y x. If I can graph out this. It is time to apply norms on both sides, vector norms and after also matrix norms. I transform the equality in between vectors in an equality questions in equation between norms, vector norms. But the norm of the product of a matrix varies matrices by some vectors. The compatibility, the so-called compatibility between vector and matrix norms, allow me to write less or equal the norm of the inverse the norm of this inverse, and we have here the sum of two norms. Again, we exploit the compatibility of this product, so we have again a norm of matrix by a norm of a vector. Finally, we use this bound for the norm of this inverse. Right again. We bound this norm with the number, the fraction, 1 over 1 minus the norm of Z. Norm of Z that can be replaced by the norm of this product, the product of these two norms. Okay. Now I want to see in this inequality the condition number. The condition number is the product of the norm of the inverse by the norm of A. So I write here the norm of A, but I must divide by the norm of A. This is simple. Moreover, I want to see relative perturbations, that is, fractions of the type norm of the perturbation above and under the norm of the exact quantity. To do this, to see this, I divide the left side and the right side by x. I can solve this x is norm x more correctly and put here the norm of x. Now another manipulation. The norm, these two norms multiplied can be replaced by the norm of B. Why? Why? A by X is equal to B. That is the exact system. In norm, norm of A by norm of X is larger or equal to norm of B. So I enlarge this fraction by substituting in the denominator this product with a smaller quantity. I put here B. I write the variable in a more clear way, so we can comment the final result. I have, on the left, the relative perturbation on x, less or equal than the condition number of A. Is the product of these two norms divided by the denominator of the fraction. I can write the denominator in a more expressive way, I can say, as 1 minus the condition number multiplied by the relative perturbation of A. Just multiply and divide by the norm of A. So we have the condition number by the relative perturbation of A. Why this? Because if I write the denominator in this fashion, I see that if the perturbation is small, this term is small, the denominator is near 1. So, in most case, this fraction is near, is about simply mu of A, the condition number is in the numerator. What has been left? This stuff. That is bracket the relative perturbation of B plus the relative perturbation of A. This is the inequality that we wanted. Is most frequent when you see the role of the condition number about this kind of phenomena. We remark that in presence or perturbations on the data of the problem, of our problem, the data of, the, of our problem are constituted by B and A. These are their perturbations. Their perturbations can be magnified by this factor, which in most cases has the same order of magnitude of the condition number. So we can conclude that the condition number mu of A referred to some norm. I can use this must be clear. I can use any norm. These conclusions is results hold for any choice of vector and matrix norm which are compatible. In most cases, norm 2 of both matrix, matrices and vectors, norm 1 and so on. The condition number is related with the let's say sensibility of the solution to sensibility of the solution to the perturbations of the data. This is well known. There is another interesting aspect that must be remarked. This statement seems to regard essentially the effect, the effects of the representation errors of the data. The perturbations of the data can be the errors which affect the data when represented inside the computer. But there is another type of implication of the result. Also, the errors that are produced during the implementation of an algorithm can be modeled according to an idea that gave rise to the so-called backward error algorithm or method, if you prefer, for linear systems. I can see the computed solution x tilde, computed solution of the linear system computed using a method, an algorithm which implements that method. I can see this computed solution as x plus delta x, where this x plus delta x is the exact solution of the perturbed systems I considered before. Given a look, I have rounded out the formula. If I give a look to the previous formula, I can conclude that quantity norm of delta x over norm x is small, if the condition number is small and if the perturbation over the delta are small. First point, the condition number of A is small. Second point, norm of delta A and the norm of delta B are small both. The first point is what we already know. The good conditioning of the system, of the problem I want to solve. The second, since delta A and delta B are fictitious perturbations simulating the effect of the errors which are produced during the algorithm, these two quantities are, they depend on the method. The method and the algorithm which implements the method. So they are relative to the stability of the method. So, from this point of view, in order to have a good result, I must have a small condition number, but also a requirement of stability, which is represented by these two quantities. final remark that gives a light about the behavior of the direct methods we will see after. It can be shown that these qualities, it can be shown that these two perturbations in norm are connected in a simple way with the growth of the intermediate results, of the algorithm used. I mean, if you choose Gauss elimination method during the application, during the implementation of the method, you compute the new entries of the matrices that result from the transformation of the initial coefficient matrix, the so-called Gauss. You start from matrix A, you obtain several intermediate matrices A super 1, A super n minus 1. The final matrix is alpha triangle and so on. If the entries of these matrices are large, this means that these perturbations, this means that normal delta A and delta B can, so may, let's say may be large, and as a consequence, possible instability. So this is true in general. In order to have a good result, we have a well-conditioned problem, in this case a well-conditioned matrix, and a stable algorithm. Now we turn to the three factorizations that we introduced last time, beginning from the factorization which is involved in the Gauss method. That is the LU factorization. There is a famous result about the existence and the unicity of this factorization under suitable assumptions. These suitable assumptions, sets only one assumption is this. action. Existence and uniqueness of LU factorization. Remember that this factorization is made up by two triangular matrices and U. The only restriction is on L that must have the main entries equal to 1. So, assumption. As simple as this. The matrix is A, the subscript is over or down. Let me see. The subscript here. The matrix is A sub K, which are the so-called leading. We have already seen this matrices, leading principle or main minors or sub matrices. Remember, they are the sub matrices obtained by cancelling the last rows and columns having the same indices. We consider all these matrices with key, which is the order, from 1 up to n minus 1. It is not necessary to have the full matrix non-singular. It can be singular at this regard. Different from zero, naturally. The factorization exists and it is unique. The proof is short and quite mechanical. It is by induction on the order of the matrix. So we start with n equal to 1. The Gaussian matrix made by only one element L is made by only one entry equal to 1, and U is simply A sub 1, 1. We assume that the factorization exists for order sizes less than n. So true for sizes less than n. We use n or k. Use n as a feature. So we consider the matrix A sub n. We partition it considering the leading principle minor of size n minus 1. Here we put two vectors. A column vector D, a row vector C super H, DH, and here a number alpha in position n, x. We are looking for a factorization at U. We partition L and U in the same way. Here is 0, here is 1, here is the row vector U to H, and so on. U and minus 1, V, and beta. If these two matrices exist, their submatrices must satisfy the following relations, which come out from the rule of row by column row. In particular, we find that this matrix is equal to the product of L n minus 1 by n minus 1. These matrices exist because we are on the size n minus 1, which is less than n. They exist unique. We use them to find what? U, V, and beta. Because we have then that C to the H, this vector, must be equal second row first column U to the H by who? B must satisfy first row, second column, L and minus 1 by V. This mode. And finally, alpha must satisfy the equation U H by V plus beta. Which are the unknowns? U, V, and beta. U is given by this product. U is invertible? Sure. Because L by U makes A. This is not singular. L is not singular. Its determinant is 1. So also U is not singular. So A is invertible. In the same way, V is equal to Ln minus 1 inverse by V. And finally, V, you can compute V as alpha minus this number U to the H by V. There is only one solution, only one. U, all of them. bit, only one beta. We observe that the metrics are does not appear in this development, in this proof. The last leading principle minor is the one with size and minus one. So also if the matrix A is singular, the factorization exists unique. This may appear strange, but this is true. A few words about well-known generalization of these results. This result can appear poor because this assumption is a strong assumption. We consider any matrix with zero in the position 1, 1. This matrix does not fulfill the requirements of the result before. See, this matrix does not have the factorization value. Why? Because this is a zero. It can be shown that with a suitable permutation matrix P for any matrix A, some P exists permutation matrix such that the new matrix P by A is LU factorizable. Consider the matrix P by A is equivalent to consider rearrangement of the rows of the matrix. That is, speaking about the Gaussian determination, this means to introduce the possibility of switching rows during the elimination in the method of Gauss. We take, as usual, a short break. Any question? I often wonder if you know already most of these things, which in some aspects are preliminary things, or not. Especially some things we have seen in Calcolo Numerico, but not all. The LU factorization in some courses is not considered. The variant which we will see now are not frequently present in most of the, especially the short courses of numerical analysis. Well, we will continue after.